Food for thought. Call Carol at 866-823-1077. And now, it's Food for Thought.
It is, and I'm Mike Morin. Carol Lawrence, co-host of this show, Food for Thought, is away for a few days. My co-host today is Carrie Lehman, founder of Tidewater Catering Group, and then a couple of really cool restaurants in the Mill Yard, Waterworks Cafe in the Wombeck Mill, and Bayona Cafe in the Jefferson Mill, recently opened, and there'll be a new one. Not in the downtown Mill Yard, but not too far away, and she will give us the details and the name of the restaurant before the end of the show today. So if you're a Carrie Lehman restaurant fan, this will make you happy because it's not necessarily downtown. It's another part of town spreading out just a little bit. Our show is brought to you by Fallon's Furniture, also the Red Arrow Diners, Manchester, Milford, and now with the drive-in in Londonderry, and Puerto Vallarta Mexican Grill on 2nd Street in Manchester. So did you enjoy lunch with the mayor? He certainly enjoyed your food.
I am thrilled that he drank kale.
That was a major victory today, was it not?
It was, considering the fact that for 1 year I've been holding this under my sleeve, wanting to get that when he scowled at the thought of kale. Well, but in all fairness to him, I mean, the way I presented it, you know, you think of kale, and I think as our next guest is going to attest that people have a lot of food fears, and sometimes you have to break them down and let somebody you trust. And I'm grateful for the trust he placed in us just then. So,
yeah. And next time it's a blind taste test.
Because, I think that was a brilliant idea. That was brilliant. Well, you know, you see the commercials of Dunkin' Donuts versus, you know, Cumberland Farms, and which you prefer. And, you know, there's a lot to say about that, about the way things are marketed and the way your mind thinks about things and prejudices.
Yes,
if
indeed.
If I'm saying it correctly. So I'm delighted. So thank you to Mayor Gatsis. We enjoyed having you here, and I'm glad you enjoyed lunch. And good stuff. Good talking stuff.
He was just a little lukewarm to my suggestion to change the parking maximum times.
I was actually waiting for him to tell you to take ride a bike in, and then I was really going to fall over laughing.
Thanks a lot.
Or send me out to put more money in your meter.
Oh, you know, I didn't think about that. Our next guest typically joins us a little later in the hour, but he is in at this time right now, Chef Patrick Hall. He is from Lakes Region Community College at Shaker Village and the Shaker Table. He's the head of the Culinary Arts Program, and what a beautiful place to teach tomorrow's young chefs and line cooks and everything else.
Yes.
So it's very nice to see you again, sir.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me again. I love coming in. I love being here. So, and I like to see new faces. So that's great.
Well, you know, your timing couldn't be better because I think you're not only passionate about cooking, you're also passionate about teaching because that's what you do when you could be doing other things.
Oh, absolutely.
And so it's a priority in your life. And my co-host today, Carrie Lehman, I think has a great interest in educating people. I've watched kind of from afar on how she runs her business, and the one thing that she made clear to me years ago when we chatted was that everybody is kind of taught all the other jobs so that you could just substitute people as needed, so everybody has a concept of how the business goes, and that all goes with education. So I'm not sure where we want to start this, but
I totally agree. And and like I said, you know, it's funny because I just had talked to someone this weekend. We were talking about, you know, jobs, and we were talking about, because there's so many jobs out there right nowadays, especially in the restaurant industry. And but to be that quality employee, you have to be well rounded with everything that you do in the restaurant industry. And that's my belief. And I've done everything. I've held every position in the restaurant industry, from dishwasher to owner. So and it's important. It's very, very important. So.
You know, the reality of it is, Chef, that I think a lot of these young people come in with eyes wide open. Yeah. And I think that and I don't mean to be dismissive to all these great Food Network shows, because I think they are entertaining. But I think we can all agree the entertainment sometimes isn't very realistic.
No.
And they come into these schools thinking, you know, I'm going to get a book deal. I'm going to get, you know, and truthfully, I've interviewed some of these. So how do you bridge the gap between these wide eyed, somewhat naive young people that are so eager to be in this industry, and tread lightly in the fact that you want to teach them the truth of it, but you don't want them, you want them to matriculate. I mean, you don't want them, you don't want to lose them. You want them to end up in this business.
Yeah. And I think my approach to young students that come into the industry is just to be very, very straightforward. And when I go out and I talk to students and I go out and I talk to high schools, I said, you know, this is a great industry. You'll never not have a job. But you're going to be working nights. You're going to be working weekends. You're going to be working holidays. I said, so it's, you know, you got to get important to long hours. I said, and there's no more colored hair and earrings and all that sort of stuff.
Good point.
You know, so you got to hit it home to them, you know. So.
Now, and the reaction, do you find people right off the bat will say, well, this isn't for me. I didn't know it would be like this.
We get a lot of people. Like, I don't, like, I, when we have students come in here, well, you know, we might get like 50 new students in a year. And after the first semester, you know, we could go through, we'll probably lose about 20 of them.
Right.
You know, because they don't, just like you said, you know, the Food Network, you know, like I said, it's a great, it's beautiful.
Well,
it's,
I think even their parents think it's going to be like that. And then they come home after a couple classes and say, Mom, I had to wash dishes. What do you mean you had to wash? I don't even make you wash dishes. And I really think it's extraordinary.
I create a schedule for my students, and part of the students, they get the dishes and they get pots and pans, and they look at it like, well, what? And I said, yeah, dish. You know, I have a little sign that says, you know, over the dish station, it says population 2.
You know? Oh, that's fantastic. Oh, I'm gonna.
So it's
another stolen idea by Carrie.
You guys, you guys hear that, Team Tidewater? Population 2. I love it.
Population 2. But it's so important because you know what? If you become a boss, okay, you get. You become a boss, or you become a chef, you become, you know, a general manager, you shouldn't be able to ask somebody to do something that you couldn't do yourself.
It's absolutely true, sir. You know? And I think you live by example, you lead, excuse me, by example. And one of the things that I've noticed is, and I think I've spoken to many chefs, is the frustration is the sense of entitlement.
Entitlement, yeah.
And it's maddening. Now, there are other culinary programs in the state, mm-hmm. and yours is certainly one of the well-noted ones. You have a great setup up there. Canterbury, right?
Yep. It's more of a realistic setting. You know, it's a you go to these CTE programs, which is so great nowadays.
Now what's CTE?
Career and Technical Education. Okay. And that's what my master's degree is in, is a Career and Technical Education. And we go around and I do recruitment to, you know, like Concord High School and Manchester, MST. And you go in there and they have these beautiful kitchens. And it's like kind of like, you know, our situation is beautiful. We got a beautiful restaurant, great property with the shaker table. It's all farm to table, but it's set up as a real restaurant,
right?
You know, and I say, look around. I said, take a look at this kitchen. I said, it's huge. You know, it's so much space and more room for activities around and stuff like that. I said, but the likeliness is, I said, you go out into the restaurant industry. I said, you know, this little room that we're sitting here is probably going to be the size of your kitchen. You know, and I said, and that's the reality of it.
Right.
I said,
well, let's face it. In the restaurant business, you're just like in hotels. I think you make money with the phrase they say, heads in beds. Yeah. So you try to minimize the amount of real estate in your hotel that is not needed for amenities not related to that direct revenue line. And the same is true for restaurants. You need seats.
Yeah.
You need seats. And so who gets the short end of the stick? Storage.
Yep. Kitchen. And it should be that way too, because you want all your food to come in fresh and you want it to be used. So,
absolutely.
You know, on a daily basis,
absolutely.
But you know, the whole front of the house, we call it the dining room, it's front of the house. They're huge and they should be beautiful because that's what the people want. That's, you're entertaining people. People come out to be entertained nowadays. And so, you know, just like you want that atmosphere, mm-hmm. you know, and you want that person that can come over and talk to and be personable. You know, one of the biggest things, you know, I teach dining room class, and one of the biggest things I do is, you know, we set up the students and I, you know, we do like mock demos before we even start service. And half the battle is just going up to even talk to their own peers, people they know, to go over and speak to them properly.
Oh,
you know,
goodness.
I said, you know, we have a restaurant that's open and we have an elderly population because we have a, you know, full course dinner, super salad, entree, dessert for $9. And so you go up to a table, I said, of older ladies, and you see, you know, go up there, the first things I want to come up there and say, hey guys, how was everything? I'm like, all right, hold on. They're not guys. They're four ladies.
Yeah.
And let me just tell you something. They're going to get very upset at you for saying it in that manner, saying hi, guys, you know, because that's not proper.
Yeah, I've been nailed a few times on radio for using guys to address the general population.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, not often. I think most women realize where you're going with that. But especially a little older demographic generation, they're a little more proper about that, and they're not guys. You're right.
Then, you know, and just being able to take that take that shock out of just being able to speak in general, you know, and go up to some people and confront people, and it's half the battle. And I said, never mind the rest of the stuff. I said, then you have to take their order, then you have to, you know, serve it properly and things like that.
Let me ask you this, if I could, to both of you. How are women treated in general versus the rest of perhaps industry or the workforce in the kitchen, in the restaurant industry? Is this a place that, that women feel welcome?
Today it's becoming more and more. I mean, I don't know what your thought is, but in the back, you know, when I first started, I've been doing this for 27 years. It was really, it was a guy's game in the back of the kitchen, you know, for the most part. And, you know, it would be very rare to see a woman in the kitchen. And, but at the same time, also society too. Like, I remember going, you know, I went to Johnson & Wales University, and when I graduated, it was just a college. It wasn't as popular as it was now. And there was no Food Network. There was Food Network, but just barely coming out. So I'd be walking down with my knife kit and my checks and going to school, and they'd be like, "Hey, bake me a pie," you know? And I'm like, "Oh, thank you very much."
Carrie, do you want to weigh in on that?
Well, I think similarly when, and I think I told you, when I said I wanted to go to school for hotel management, my father was just devastated. And his thought was, "I'm going to pay you to go to Boston University and you're going to serve people." And, you know, no disrespect meant to my father, but it was a bigger picture for me. And I think that my first year out of college, actually, my first job, I was lucky enough to get to the Charles Hotel in Harvard Square,
which, oh my goodness, yes.
It was, I couldn't have asked for a better training ground, but I got a real world experience. And
this was in the 90s?
I graduated college in 1990.
Okay.
So the executive chef, I think, and this is probably not uncommon to some other females that have been out there. We were at a staff meeting and I went to say something and he said, "You'll talk when I talk to you." Yeah. And I was the assistant banquet manager and I was just not having that. But I think I also noticed, and I was in operations, so I was a little bit more fortunate, but I've told the story to many of my employees that I remember that the women from sales would cut through the kitchen to get from where our employee cafeteria was to get back on the stairs to go to the sales office. And of course, they were all wearing dresses and heels, and I would be in something more conservative because I was, you know, working around food and stuff. And the catcalls and the commentary, and I thought, oh my goodness, I don't want to be in sales. And certainly that has changed. I mean, I will tell you right now that our culinary director, Johnny Wallace, and all of our chefs work side by side with women. I mean, I am a woman owner, and I'm not a chef. I walk freely through the kitchen. It's respectful. But I think, you know, going back to this education thing, I think it's important that they understand how a real kitchen operates. Oh, yeah. And there still can be, let's face it, a lot of emotion, a lot of heat of the moment, and it can fall apart very quickly. And the person leading that kitchen, driving that boat, as we always say, needs to have their head on straight, yeah, whether you're male or female. So I think at this point, it's become more of a command of your craft, but also a command of your leadership.
Yeah, and it's also respect for yourself in the industry.
Absolutely.
You know, that's the biggest thing, too. I mean, they were watching these shows, you know, on TV where, you know, the Hell's Kitchen, where you're taking a plate and you smash it in someone's chest and stuff like that.
I'm like, students are crazy. They're
looking at you like, yo, does that really happen? And I'm like, yeah, well, probably something. But I said, but think about that. If someone did that to you, I said, would you keep your job? Would you stay? I'm staying here.
Right.
No, I said, that doesn't happen. I said, and you know, when as an owner of a restaurant, you know, assaulting somebody, let's
or
take
the
that,
chefs,
you know,
making the contestants cry. And I mean, and yes, we all do get emotional and things are, yeah, said, you know, like, hey, you didn't make that, you know, Bordelaise sauce correct. But the fact of the matter is you're continuing to educate people even when they're, yeah, your employees. And, you know, I say to everyone, you know, we all live and work in this community. You know, we're not in some huge, you know, we're not in Denver. We're not in Chicago where you can hide.
Yeah.
We can't hide. And your students are going to always remember who you are. And I hope that my team remembers who I am wherever they may go.
Yeah.
And I hope that I've inspired them. And that's what I look to. I have a dear friend, Chef Stefan Ryle, who's at Southern.
Mm-hmm. I know
Southern,
very well.
Stefan,
yeah.
And Stefan and I worked together for a long time. And you know, I have really, very often I'll call him and say, I'm troubled. I'm really troubled at some of the things I see. What's going on over there? What are you doing for your students? So, I mean, do you find that it's becoming more difficult? He mentioned to me, ironically, that he is astounded at the number of females coming into the program and that they want to bake.
That's the one I think. I had written our baking program. I first started the community college, it was New Hampshire Community Technical College. Then we went to Lakes Region Community College. And so I started with just restaurant management. Then I wrote the culinary arts program and the baking and pastry program. Culinary came on. It was very popular. And I started doing the baking program. Our baking program's larger than our culinary program now. And it's, you know, and I talk to people. We have articulations with Johnson & Wales and other in Southern New Hampshire University and other places too. And it's the same thing. Johnson & Wales has a waiting list on their
Let me ask you, let's call a spade a spade.
Yeah.
Where are they going to get jobs?
Well, that's the thing. Well, you know, what's driving this is, you know, cupcake wars and, you know, all the cake things. And it's very, you know, it's hard. It's few and far between as far as, like, you know, bakeries, you know, authentic bakeries, you know, being around here anymore. It's not like, you know, I said, we're here in Manchester is probably more than where I'm at in Concord. I mean, there's not really
further north, right?
You know, as you go further, I mean, if you're in a metropolitan area or you're in a city or things like that, yeah, there's probably a lot.
Well, from a scale of economy, Mike, I think you'll agree that the big box stores, you know, the Market Baskets, the Hannafords, the Fresh Markets, I mean, they have baking sections that are quite attractive. I mean, mm-hmm. certainly not what, you know, we're making over here at Queen City Cupcakes. But in terms of a convenience shopping and affordability.
Yeah, I look at some of those display cases, and I think I'm in Vegas.
I know.
Yeah. And, of course, as you guys know, I'm sorry, you both know, a lot of the preliminary baking is done off-premise and then brought in for the finish, the piping, and all that stuff. So it's you're right. And what I'm getting now, listening to you both discuss this, is that the food shows on TV are not necessarily helpful in creating expectations, but they and this is my input – but they're generating interest in the public to try new foods and new adventures. So they're driving people to your restaurants. But then once the chefs get there, they're totally disoriented because it's not like it is on TV.
It's I think they up the standards of restaurants today from before. I think there is a little bit of that because people start seeing some of the fancier foods and different things that are out there. But you know, like shows like Chopped, where I'm gonna get jelly beans and something else and be expect to make it. You know, students want to do that all the time. I think there is value in being able to do that, and I do that with my students. Like, it's called a mystery basket. You give them a basic protein and say, okay, what can you create out of that? Okay, and I think that creativity is important to have as a chef. And it's probably one of the most creative things, you know, to do. And, you know, because you want to be able to create and be competitive with other people for menu-wise. But, you know, it doesn't get, you know, out there. I think, you know, I used to get some students that would come in here and they want to, you know, learn, you know, molecular gastronomy, you know, using free dried ice and things like that. Goodness, I'm like, hey, listen, learn how to cook the fish first before we start running this other stuff.
Learn the basics. That's what we say. You got to focus on the basics. Yeah. Speaking to this and even mentioning to Mayor Gatsis earlier about how, you know, there's all these great restaurants in our area and they're looking for a good weekend profitability wise with the weather. Well, in order to make these restaurants, you know, function and for me to continue to grow my business and for people like Tom Boucher and Michael Buckley to continue to grow their businesses, we need employees.
Yeah.
So we need talent. So what are you finding is the sentiment amongst these graduates? Are they staying in the state? I mean, you spoke earlier about this millennial and staying here. Mm-hmm. And well, our industry is a little different. So are they staying here? Or are you finding that the culinary scene in New Hampshire isn't doing it for them?
No, I you know, especially working for the community college. That's, I mean, we work with, you know, all sorts of, you know, everybody from the commands to you name it, you know, O's to everybody. And we try to, you know, to form that professional learning community for our students because we want to keep them in New Hampshire. But a lot of them do, and, you know, in where I'm at in Laconia, you know, like for the Lakes Region Community College or in Shaker Table, you know, we get them from everybody from Manchester, from Exeter, from all over. And I find students, you know, students want to stay here. And they do stay here. I think we just have so many jobs in the restaurant industry right now. People looking for jobs. I literally, you know, have about 300 jobs for students offer. I have calls every single day for people looking for qualified help. And that's the key, is qualified help to go out there. And
Am I understanding this? You're saying you have too many employees and not enough jobs, or too many jobs?
Not enough students.
Well, good, then I don't feel crazy because we've been looking.
Yeah. It's hard. It's really rough. And, you know, I owned a business for 8 years. I owned my own restaurant. And that was the one of the, you know, I owned it with my wife. And so that was one of the reasons why I just couldn't find the help that I wanted to. It got to the point where it's like I'd work 3 or 4 months by myself, you know, in the kitchen, being very busy during the summer season. And it's just crazy.
So this brings up our conversation earlier when we talked about Dean Kamen opening the Foundry and what a large restaurant that is, and this to-be-possibly announced chef that he has, and how staffing, you know, you can have a great chef and you can have a great owner, but, you know, to run a 250-seat restaurant, what would you say would be the staffing needs you'd have there? It's got to be 30 employees at least.
At least, yeah.
I mean, think about that. you know, it's, and everyone laughs. I open these little cafes. I need three, you know, I'm like, just give me three good people. But, it is troubling because, as I said to someone earlier, I can keep coming up with concepts and great ideas and negotiating great leases and finding beautiful places, but I can't do it myself.
No.
I need these great people around me. And where are they coming from?
And it, you know, it kills me though, because you look on, you know, you watch TV, you watch the news and you read the paper and it's, oh, unemployment's down. Huh. It's like, well, I can cure this in about 2 seconds.
Right.
I said, you know, this is, you know, it's so, you know, crazy. It's not that unemployment's down. It's just that they don't want to take the jobs that are out there.
And the ones that you do bring in that are right out of culinary school or your program,
do they want to
work hard the way that you did? Are they as hungry as you were? Because I don't sense that in the radio business, and I sense that it may very well apply to hospitality.
Yeah, it's back to what you said about the sense of entitlement. You know, I said that I think there's a little bit too much, but a lot of these students, I have students that come in and you know, they go through school, and you know, they ask me, what's the best thing you could tell them? Well, get a job when you're young. I said, start there. I said, I have students that are 20 years old, don't have a job, that never had a job before.
Oh my goodness.
And that's the sadness of it, and that's so now you're trying to send them out with no job experience
in a tough industry.
You know, okay, yeah, you have a degree, but that's fine. But it's one of those things that you're in a tough industry where people just want to make sure that they're going to have someone that's going to be able to work out for them.
Yeah, it does strike me as a very difficult industry.
It is.
Well, we always say we go to work when other people go to play.
That's it.
And as I've told many people, if you do not surround yourself around people that either have similar lifestyles, whether they be in medicine or law enforcement, or, I mean, let's face it, if you're a nurse, I spoke with a client of mine who's a nurse and she works, you know, four 12-hour days. I mean, that's a lifestyle choice.
Mm-hmm.
Ours isn't really much different, but the different part is you're not going to go to every Saturday birthday party or every mm-hmm. Sunday barbecue. And if you are not passionate about this,
let me talk to you about getting up at 3 a.m. for 30
exactly.
years.
That's what I wouldn't like to do.
To do the radio
I'm with you.
Thing.
So,
I mean, it's great now not to have to do that, but it does change your lifestyle and it creates inconveniences at times with the loved ones in your life. And hopefully you have somebody that understands that. And you're right. You find people that can at least adapt to what you have to do and hope that their lifestyle is somewhat similar.
Yeah, absolutely.
With the younger students nowadays, I mean, when I first started cooking, you know, I started when I was 13 years old. I mean, and it was someone's brother, you know, my brother's restaurant. So I was kind of working under the table type of thing and, you know, started off washing pots and pans and then started doing prep. But then I fell in love with it. And that's, you know, and my grandfather's a chef. So it was kind of instilled in me since I was very young. And I think that's what it takes nowadays for someone. If you get someone that's really good, they've been doing it for a while and they've had that job and they've had that work ethic. And these soft skills are what I try to work on with the students all the time to let them know that it's okay. It's not okay to show up late. It's not okay to come in here with colored hair and you know, I hate to say, but because it's a lifestyle nowadays with nose rings and, you know, all sorts of stuff. And, you know, just, I said, it's just, I said, you're going to make yourself unemployable.
You could thank Guy Fieri for that, by the
way.
Yeah.
That's it. And it's, you know, and that's the mentality nowadays. And I said, you try to change it, but it's so hard because you, in one sense, you're trying to teach them the right way. But at the same time, society is saying it's okay for this. You know, we can't discriminate with the body piercings and all that sort of stuff. And you know, what do you do? You know, so it's kind of,
that's a whole other topic, isn't it?
Oh, yeah,
it certainly is.
As an employer, you have to tread so lightly.
It,
right?
Oh, yeah. It's a daunting task. And for a business my size, where I, for example, don't have a human resources director.
I'm looking at her, aren't I?
Yeah. And I, you know, it can be frightening. I mean, there's a lot of sleepless nights and soul searching as to how to handle certain things and how, and yes, some of it is what I believe in my gut, but some of it also is legality.
Yeah.
I mean, you just.
Safety.
Absolutely.
Sanitation,
I mean, I want.
Safety issue.
Yeah. I want to protect the legal ramifications that could, you know, devastate this company and the employees that rely on me to keep it whole.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I was watching Top Chef last night, which is one of these, you know, take the best home chefs and turn them into, you know, ready to walk into a major restaurant. And I can't tell you how many people had pink hair or body art or piercings and stuff. And I, I mean, my impression was that's kind of the state of the art in back of the house, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I don't know.
And I think that goes back to the TV thing. I think that's why people that are in the industry get frustrated is because they TV will generate these people as rock stars and going out and
they make them the titles.
Yeah. And the truth behind that is, you see people cooking with all these wristbands and earrings and rings and things like that, but that's unsanitary inside the real restaurant industry. If a health inspector came in and saw that, they'd be like, take your watch off, take your rings off. The only thing you can't really mess with is a wedding ring. But I mean, like earrings or anything like that, because it could fall into the food and it happens. And it really does happen, or people with long hair. I always tell this story that there's people that work in bakeries and stuff and they haven't tied up their hair. They can get their hair caught inside the mixer and scalp themselves.
Oh, yeah.
And you hear all the horror stories of that. But that's the truth behind it. So if you don't take those and you don't teach students that properly, that's the ramifications that could happen.
So how do we get this word out? I mean, you've both done a great job of this today, yeah. that is the real world of working in hospitality and food service, because as you pointed out, the unrealistic expectations, how does that get out? Watch PBS?
You got to do internships. And I realize everybody wants to make money, but you're not going to come in and do an internship and make $15 an hour. Yeah. It's just not going to happen. You're, as they say, green, wet behind the ears, whatever the phrase is. And we're going to tread lightly around you as employers because we don't want you to get hurt. You're not going to find out all the trade secrets and recipes because we don't know where you're going. But if you want an opportunity to experience a taste, oh, that was a good word.
There you go.
A taste of what it would be like, find an internship, put your ego aside for a summer or a semester or a week or two. It doesn't really matter, but you have to get behind the scenes.
And yeah. Would you like to teach, Carrie? I mean, not that you have the time, but.
Well, it's funny. I was saying earlier, I taught adjunct at Southern New Hampshire University for 2 years, and it was one of the most rewarding experiences from a couple levels. One, they gave me a great opportunity to be able to plead my case. But what I did was I taught a class called Life Beyond the Line. And it was to second-year culinary students. And this book, it was based on a book by Professor Noel Cullen, who was a professor of mine at Boston University. And it basically says, listen, just because you're behind the line, as they call it in the restaurant business cooking, doesn't mean you can't understand or shouldn't understand what goes on in the business side or the front of the house, as you said earlier. Mm-hmm. And as I mentioned, at the beginning of the class, I would say to the students, how many of you want to either be an executive chef, a culinary director, or an owner? 2/3 of them would raise their hand, and I'd say, well, you better pass this class because you're going to learn liquor costs, food costs, human resources, organizational behavior. And their faces would drop. But I think, and sadly, I had to suspend my teaching because my work just got so busy, and I wanted to do a good job, so I couldn't do both. But I think that one of the most rewarding parts was getting these students to come up to me after class and say, how can I work with you? Can you hire me? I'll work the summer. And I could sit here and rattle off 10 people that either still stay in touch with me or still work with me, or I was able to find employment somewhere else because they were leaving the state. And it was so rewarding because they looked at me and they said, we feel like you're telling us the real world.
All right. We have to leave it there, unfortunately, as we're a couple minutes over time. Chef Patrick Hall, good conversation today
with you. Thank you very much. That was great.
Yes, thank you.
And Carrie Lehman, certainly eye-opening for anybody who's considering or has kids considering entering your businesses. He is we call you the head guy at the culinary.
Yeah, I'm director of the program coordinator is what they usually call it.
Lakes Region Community College and Shaker Village, the Shaker's Table. In Canterbury, we will see you next week.
Yeah, absolutely. And so same time, same channel.
We'll be here. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
It is 1:34. When we come back, some great moments with David Letterman and Julia Child from back in the 80s. I don't think you're going to want to miss that. This is The Pulse, Food for Thought, WTPL.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
It's Food for Thought, ladies and gentlemen, at 1:39. Mike Morin, co-hosted today with Carrie Lehman of a number of restaurants. A brand new one is in the works, and we'll let you know what the name of that is. You'll be the first to know if you're a fan of Bayona Cafe. in the Jefferson Mill or Waterworks Cafe, favorite of mine in Wambeck Mill, you will perhaps find out your next favorite restaurant, or at least a place you want to try when it opens. In the meantime, last night was the last night of David Letterman, 33 years, first with NBC, and of course the ruckus, the trumped up discussions with Jay Leno and that whole deal, and he ended up going to CBS. David Letterman did for the last 22 years. It was a fantastic show last night. They couldn't show all the clips, of course. That would be literally impossible after 6,000 shows. And they didn't overclip the show, which they let it breathe, as I like to say. But there was one segment that I've always remembered because it had to do with food. And I did a story in a magazine not long ago about Julia Child, and I used this clip to kind of help write the tone of the story. It was back in the 80s, and I just set this up for you because obviously there is no video to go along with this, but the audio pretty much carries it. Julia Child probably at the time was in her 80s, maybe 70s, and she was going to come on and show Dave and help him make a hamburger. Perfect for a guy from Indiana, nice Midwest staple. And they were using not a hot plate, but it's gas powered. It's when you put your frying pan on it, and you can cook fairly efficiently, but it wasn't working. And what happened after that? Just one thing into another. It was hilarious. So here it is from the 80s: David Letterman and Julia Child.
Let's bring her out here, folks. Please welcome Julia Child. Julia. So tonight we're going to cook right
hamburger.
Here. A hamburger.
A very fine hamburger.
Okay.
And here it is right here. Very fine meat.
Hamburger.
This is some of the best meat that came over from Good Morning America, because they all look at your show. They all look at your show and they said, "Bee, you've got to have the best."
This is Good Morning America meat?
It certainly is. It up like they never had.
That's
it
a
before.
Special category that the USDA has arrived at for television. Right. This is GMA meat, ladies and gentlemen.
Exactly.
What's the ground beef going for these days?
This was $1.29. Mm-hmm. Very good. We got 10% off because it was Good Morning America. Now we're going to fix it up. And would you like to braid it or don't you like onion on your
No,
hands?
I love onion. And we have one minute for the whole thing? Is all we have? Oh, because we were killing all of the time at the top of the show, and now we only have a minute. I was going to be stunned.
Right, we'll do that in 20 seconds, David.
We'll just braid the onion.
If you braid the onion, and I'll put in a little salt and pepper.
You know what? Is it better to grade the onion or chop it up? Grate the onion.
Oh, grate it if it's good, because we're not going to cook it.
Oh, my thumb! Let me get that in the meat there.
That'll be good for it. All right.
Let's.
4 o'clock in the morning.
Have you ever cooked something, Julia, that just turned out awful?
Yes, lots of times.
Yeah, and what do you do then? What happens?
I give it to my husband.
All right. Yeah.
Very nice.
What?
This is going to be very rare, I think.
Okay. Good Morning America didn't pay the electricity bill, apparently.
Well, this is their pan, anyway.
Wait, this is embarrassing. Everything comes from Good Morning America?
Well, the stove is yours.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a beauty, too, huh?
It is.
Just like Grandma used to make. What is that, a Mattel? That's nice. Okay.
Good.
Hamburger, but what happened exactly there?
Well, now this, if I brought mine over from Good Morning America, would have worked. This doesn't work.
Doesn't work at all?
So we're
going
to change
in?
It to beef tartare. It's good because it's got all the onion in it. That's going to be absolutely
beef
delicious.
Beef tartare, but it's just ground beef. Don't you use a higher quality than...
No, you don't have to.
Don't have to.
Well, beef particularly when you have what we're going to put on it.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to have a little mustard on like mm-hmm. this. You're going to love this.
Well, I'm not going to be eating it, so...
You're not!
Well, it's raw beef, and you get dysentery from eating that, won't you?
Oh, no, you don't.
Hepatitis?
Oh, no.
What do you get from eating uncooked meat?
You get healthy. Now, we have a finishing touch.
All right, away.
It's going to be beef tartare gratiné, and you don't have any cooking equipment here. You don't have a broiler.
What is this?
This is a blowtorch.
A blowtorch, all right.
That's supposed to light. Where's your cigar? That'll light.
Okay.
There, now, do you want a gratiné?
I just turn it on the cheese there?
Yep.
So the object is to melt the cheese over the raw beef.
But this is nice kind of recipe. It would be very good.
What do you do? You cook this when the car breaks down on the highway somewhere?
Well, I mean, if you come to a place where they don't have the proper kind of cooking equipment, you bring your own stuff.
Yeah, but now this isn't a real...
Look good?
But this is not a real recipe, is it? It's just raw beef and melted cheese?
Well, you're going to try it. I think you're going to love it.
But this is the kind of thing that would start riots in prisons.
Oh, no. But this is very good quality. Very high quality.
All they serve us is melted cheese and raw meat.
What else is that? Look, isn't that? Well, this is actually a serious cooking thing.
Now, what do you call this, Julia? What do we call this?
This is called beef tartare au gratin. Where's that knife and fork?
It smells pretty good.
Well, doesn't it smell good?
I can't wait to get into that raw beef.
And it's very healthy. It's very healthy.
I've got a gamma globulin shot here in a minute.
It's on a whole wheat pita, so that's nourishing.
And if you don't have one of these, what? Good. Use your hat, I guess?
Yes.
It makes no difference to you, does it? Just go ahead.
All right.
How about stuff it into an oven mitt? Mmm, there's good eating. Now, are you going to have a little of it?
Why, certainly.
Are you? Let's have it a little
course,
together.
I think it's going to be
delicious. So there you go. David Letterman. Now, see, that would not have been nearly as funny if they didn't have the mechanical malfunction or whatever it is with the stove they were using.
That was absolutely priceless.
And if you want to see, I mean, it's very funny visually. I mean, it does carry on the radio. But if you want to see, just Google David Letterman, Julia Child hamburger, and it'll pop up and you can just watch it on your computer.
You know what's funny is this does happen, though. These things do happen.
True.
I mean, stoves break, and especially in my world of the traveling kitchen we have.
True.
As I'm listening to this, memories of a few incidences that when new people are hired onto the staff and I tell them of something that happened, and they're like, what? What did you do? And it can be pretty funny, but, you know, thankfully it's funny. Hours and days, looking back, years back. But at that moment, you're in a panic of.
I'd love to do a segment on that sometime.
Oh, it really is, and because the bottom line is, you got to adapt.
Yeah,
we did an event once, and we were cooking at this client's home, and we got there, and her stove wouldn't work. Her oven didn't work. Nothing. She had nothing. And we actually had to go to the neighbor, which was probably a quarter of a mile away, and ask if we could use her kitchen. And I said, I hope you and your neighbor get along. You know, we hope there's no feuds, but things happen.
That's good stuff. We're going to take another break, come back, find out the name of Carrie's soon to be new restaurant, and wrap things up for Thursday's Food for Thought. This is the Pulse 107.7 WTPL. Be right back.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7. The Pulse.
WTPL, The Pulse 107.7. We're just minutes away from Kale and Company. Ken Kale in the studios today. Not here, but he'll be uptown in Bow, where they do things so well. Our Food for Thought show is brought to you by New England Coffee, the official coffee of Food for Thought, newenglandcoffee.com, and Casey's Rib Shack, famous Hickory Smoked award-winning Southern Pit Barbecue over on the west side. And I want to let you know that here at the Midtown Cafe, where we do our show, actually at the level below there, but in the beautiful showcased glassed-in studios with a piano in front of it, an open mic night for anybody that plays an instrument. We've got a piano. If you play and you'd like to be with like-minded people, it's just kind of a jam session. You come on down and you have a good time. Cost you nothing. We're doing that from 7 until 9 tonight. And there will be, I believe, some light beverages available, coffees, lattes, and things like that. So bring your instrument. Between 7 and 9, Midtown Cafe is in the Beacon Building. Just come down one flight of stairs, and you'll see the beautiful piano right there, 814 Elm Street in Manchester. And before we say goodbye to my outstanding co-host today, Carrie Lehman, who has Tidewater Catering, that's how it all began, Waterworks Cafe in the Wambach Mill, Bayona Cafe opened a short time ago in the Jefferson Mill, all those right along Commercial Street in Manchester, right on the river. And a new restaurant opening when, Carrie?
We are hoping to be open September of this year. We're going to be located in the Sundial Center for Commerce and Education.
Hesser College was there.
Yeah, just to Hesser College was there.
This now is Mount Washington College.
Yeah, right? Now Mount Washington. This was the old Hesser College cafeteria that we are going to be renovating and updating and beautifying. And we have an official name now for this cafe.
Oh, I can't wait.
You ready?
It is. Drum roll.
We're going to call it Unity Cafe.
Unity Cafe.
And really the pitch behind that is this is a shout out to all the staff, team members, and wonderful leaders and managers that I have as part of my crew, because without our unified efforts, we wouldn't all be here, and I certainly wouldn't. So this is a shout out to you guys. And this cafe is happening because of you guys, Unity Cafe.
That's really nice that, that people can look to it and say it's because of what I do that, that Carrie selected this name. How tough is it to pick a name that's going to reflect the area and the theme and the intent of a restaurant?
It can be a very daunting task. There were a couple names I was tossing around, and there are very, very few people, and I mean few meaning two, that I secretly told this to and let them chew on it, so to speak, mm-hmm. and went back and said, what do you think? And they said, I can't get it out of my head, so I love it.
Really? So how many other names were there?
There were three others.
Three others.
Yeah. Yeah.
Narrowed it down to four.
Yeah.
And came up with Unity Cafe.
Unity Cafe.
All right. So how have you, well, I'm sure you've thought far enough ahead as to how it reflects Bayona or Waterworks Cafe. It'll have its own character as these two. So what will be kind of the hook?
We're having a really cool thing called a noodle bar. And what we're going to do is it will be a build your own dish where you can choose your base. So it'll be a noodle, a lo mein, a pasta, a rice, a quinoa, a wheat berry. And then you can add things into it, your protein, your vegetables, and it'll come out fresh out of the kitchen. So you order it, and the guys are going to whip it up.
Wow. And will this be, as the others are, open from morning until afternoon?
Yes, we're going to do Monday through Friday. And we're looking at the interior being a little bit like a garden terrace feel. So really light, airy, and welcoming.
Well, you heard it here first. The brand new Carrie Lehman project called Unity Cafe on Sundial Ave in the old Hesser, Mount Washington College. We'll be opening hopefully in September.
Yes, sir.
So you got your work cut out for you.
I sure do. So, we got a lot of good people working on this.
So does that mean if I call you back to co-host again, you won't be able to come?
Absolutely not. I will make time for you, Mike, no matter what. This was an absolute delight. I'm honored. I'm thrilled. It was great people we had here, and I thoroughly enjoyed this.
It was a great debut on your part. All right, we'll see you tomorrow. It's Comedy Cuts Friday. Chad Zingale is my co-host. We'll see you tomorrow on The Pulse.